Naomi, can you hear us?
Yes, I hear you fine.
Perfect. We didn't see you. That's why we didn't think you were there. Where are you? I know you're from San Francisco, but I hope you're not there.
No, I'm here actually at AIER, which has been a strong supporter of the movement to reopen society. And I'm a fellow here, so I'm in Great Barrington, Massachusetts.
Okay, great. So you're on the East Coast, and it's not as early not as it is in San Francisco, of course.
Okay. That's right.
We were talking to two journalists who are sitting right across from me, and they're describing how they're being harassed and how the so-called old media, we call them old media now, are trying to defame them, make them look like they're Nazis or simply tinfoil hat wearers. You know the story. And I was just about to explain to them that this is probably one of the 10 steps that you have described in your book, The End of America. And I think I read your latest piece in The Defender last week or so. And I think you've come to the conclusion that we have arrived at step number 10, right?
Sadly, yes.
Mm-hmm. Can you quickly explain, because those of us who have read your books, of course, know who you are, but there's some of us who haven't. So can you quickly explain about your background?
Sure. Thank you for asking. First, I'm very honored to be speaking to all of you, and thank you so much for what you're doing to defend basic liberties. It's a model for the rest of the world.
Thank you.
I am an author of 8 nonfiction books, most of them bestsellers, usually about women's issues or civil liberties. I was a former political consultant to the Clinton re-election campaign and to Gore 2000. I graduated from Yale University and was a Rhodes Scholar at Oxford University and finished my DPhil in Oxford about 5 years ago. So what should I call you?
Us as persons or us
no,
as
the you personally, because I'm about to refer.
I'm Reiner, that's Viviana, that's Antonia, and that's Justus.
Thank you so much. So what you referred to is a book I wrote in 2008 called The End of America, and in it I made the argument that there are always 10 steps that would-be tyrants on the left or on the right always take when they're seeking to close down an open society, and that it's like a blueprint and it always works. I looked at times and places in history in which that happened, whether it was Mussolini's Italy or, of course, Nazi Germany, East Germany in the 50s, China in the 80s, and so on. And what you see is the same 10 steps always. So it's not a secret. The United States teaches these 10 steps at the School for the Americas. But what really concerned me, and forgive the background noise, there's some construction going on. What really concerned me as an American citizen is that in 2008, I already saw that these 10 steps were underway in the United States of America under the Bush administration. Of course, subsequently, the Obama administration didn't hold back. You know, it's not a partisan issue. I'm sure all of you as Europeans know even better than we do, any party can engage in fascist or tyrannical behavior. And I was very concerned that very concerned to see that with the guise of under the guise of the pandemic, and as a journalist, I also want to extend my sympathies to the other journalists who are being harassed and attacked. You know, I've been deplatformed from 5 platforms since I began reporting on this issue, and you know, it's a very serious thing. It is one of the 10 steps to fascism to target and harass journalists and criminalize speech, basically, and turn critique into kind of subversion or espionage or, you know, many other ways of criminalizing free speech and journalism. But under the guise of a medical pandemic, all of the steps, but especially step 10, which is the suspension of the rule of law and the introduction of emergency measures, have been achieved, you know, in lightning fast formats. So, you know, people for 12 years have asked me, Naomi, are we at step 10 or will you let us know when we're at step 10? And we, you know, haven't been, thank God, mercifully, people have been fighting to keep that final stage from arriving, but under the guise of this medical pandemic, and this is the essay that Mr. Fulmich is describing, we have reached step 10. And so it's a terrifying moment because history shows that, you know, again, as you all know better than most Americans, that there's a very narrow window in which it's safe to fight back against tyranny when we're this late in the process. It quickly becomes too dangerous to fight back. And so that was my essay. So what I had thought to do was, but please tell me if you'd rather I just speak informally or answer questions, is I was going to read this two-page introduction, or else just kind of summarize it as you prefer.
Let me briefly translate, and then we'll just, we'll feel free to tell us whatever you think is important at this point, and we can also, we'll also be asking questions, of course.
Absolutely. Also,
sie hat beschrieben, wo sie herkommt. Sie hat, sie ist Journalistin, auch politische Aktivistin. Sie hat über Frauenrechte viel geschrieben, und sie hat schon im Jahre 2008 die in dem Buch The End of America diese 10 Schritte beschrieben, die wohl jede Gesellschaft in Anführungsstrichen geht, die von der Demokratie zum Faschismus umgedreht werden soll. Sie hat das angefangen zu schreiben oder hat das geschrieben im Rahmen der Bush-Regierung. Da sind ja auch teilweise sehr seltsame Sachen passiert. Da wurden plötzlich einige Generalstaatsanwälte entlassen. Ich glaube, es gab sogar Bestrebungen, sie alle auf einen Schlag zu entlassen. Und sie sagt, das, was wir jetzt hier haben, ist genau dieser Weg. Genau diese 10 Schritte werden jetzt gerade gegangen, beziehungsweise sind schon fast zu Ende gegangen worden. Und diesmal unter dem Deckmantel einer medizinischen Pandemie. Und die Frage ist, sagt sie, wenn wir hier schon bei Schritt 10 sind, und das sind wir nach ihrer Meinung, dann bleibt nur noch ein ganz kleines Fenster auf, um sich zu wehren, denn irgendwann wird es einfach zu gefährlich, zurückzuschlagen. Das ist in der Tat eine interessante Frage. So how far down the road are we as far as step 10 is concerned? I have always thought that the courts of law, the rule of law, is actually the last anchor, so to speak, if all else has failed. If in this case, large corporations believe that they're above the law, if politicians have been lobbied so badly that they're in line with these corporations, which is what we're seeing in this Davos clique, as we call them. But then it's up to the courts. It's up to the courts of law to draw the red line. So how far down the road are we as far as the abolishment of the rule of law is concerned?
Yeah, I mean, that is the question, because once the rule of law is suspended, once there are emergency measures, citizens have no recourse, which is why what you're doing and what your colleagues there are doing is, and the journalists, of course, as well, shining a light on it, is so incredibly important. It is literally our last hope. And I, you know, I'm not overstating. I'm not given to hyperbole about this. I'm very, very measured in assessing where we're at. And we are literally at the last bulwark once the rule of law is gone and you can't file a lawsuit, or it's a gestural thing only because the courts are corrupted. That's really it. And history has shown that over and over. So it depends on what country, you know, we're in. For instance, in the United States, I'm sitting in Massachusetts, which has completely suspended the rule of law. I mean, we're living under emergency measures. New York State also is living under emergency measures. California is living under emergency measures. And what's so terrifying is that every month I get an email from the governor's office saying that emergency measures are going to be extended another 30 days, extended another 30 days. In New York State, 14 state senators are trying to claw back Governor Cuomo's emergency powers, but are struggling to do so because the nature of emergency law is it's like jumping off a cliff. There is no law to remove emergency law. In Tennessee, I believe there was a law passed to make emergency measures illegal to deploy ever again. In California, Governor Newsom faces a recall, an initiative, which is something that 27 states have available to them for now, recall in referenda and initiatives. So there are lawsuits, you know, across the country. Of course, the media, which is highly corrupted by Gates money and pharma money in my country, in Britain, no doubt in Germany as well, around the world, won't report on this. So people don't know. And what's even worse is lawyers are unable to learn from one another. State senators and assembly people are unable to learn from one another, you know, how to proceed and what's happening and be inspired by each other, as well as unable to see model legislation. So my platform, Daily Clout, is showcasing model legislation, you know, telling people how to mount initiatives and referenda, you know, trying to mobilize people to run for office at the state assembly level to claw back emergency powers and then to prosecute people, which is absolutely the next step. I speak as a political consultant. Nothing's going to change unless the people who have seized emergency powers know they are facing criminal prosecution as well as civil action. History definitely shows that, and just being a political consultant shows that. So you're starting to, you have to have consequences. And I'm saying that peacefully so I don't get deplatformed. I mean it peacefully. But there, you know, we have to demonstrate to tyrants like Governor Cuomo, Governor Baker of Massachusetts, Gavin Newsom, that they will lose their political futures, but that they also might be facing years in jail because there are laws against this in the United States. It is treason to suspend the Constitution in this way. And treason, again, I don't want to be deplatformed, but treason is a very serious crime in our system. So what you're doing is absolutely critical. Did you want me? And, you know, some countries are beyond help. Like, I look at what's happening in Britain. I mean, I don't want to say anyone's beyond help because I don't want anyone to give up. But in Britain, people have been in lockdown for, you know, months and months at a time. Draconian measures that seem like, to me, a psychological operation to break the spirit of the people. And the psychological dimension, I'm sure you've addressed, is very powerful. You know, the targeting of journalists is a psychological demonstration to everyone that, you know, nobody's safe. But this completely demoralized, incarcerated people with restrictions that violate the Geneva Conventions, right? With, you know, and Red Cross norms about visits and, you know, let alone human rights norms about freedom of assembly and freedom of worship and, you know, property rights and so on. While they're demoralized in their homes, they're fined if they go outside, and Parliament has kind of suspended its normal processes. So, you know, both parties are saying, both major parties are saying they're in favor of lockdowns. So people are at a loss about what to do to change it. There's no action step. They are in despair. They're subverted, you know, in the language of statecraft. They're the country's morale has been broken. And this is a great nation that has lived through, you know, two world wars and fought for traditional freedoms for centuries and invented certain kinds of Western freedoms. So I guess what I'm saying is, depending on where you are, the fight is at a more or less desperate place. I am hopeful that in America, which has been so, you know, viciously kind of slammed as crazy people, you know, with mounting death rates by the Gates-funded, pharma-funded media, we are kind of leading the charge of citizens saying, you know what, we're a free people, we have a constitution, this is all completely unconstitutional, and we're going to pass laws to rebel against it. But it's a very desperate situation in most states and most countries in the West.
Okay, I'll translate again.
Thank you.
Ich habe sie gefragt, an welchem Punkt wir jetzt sind, wenn wir hier schon in der, beim 10. Schritt sind, nämlich bei der Abschaffung des Rechtsstaats, der auch aus meiner Sicht natürlich der entscheidende Punkt ist. Weil, wie gesagt, wenn schon die Konzerne glauben, über dem Gesetz zu stehen und sich alles leisten zu können, was eigentlich schon seit längerem sichtbar war, und wenn schon die Politik nicht mehr reagiert, weil sie durchlobbyiert ist von den Konzernen und sich auf den Davos-Treffen dann auch mit denen verbrüdert hat, dann bleiben nur noch die Gerichte. Und da sagte sie, ja, also das kommt drauf an, wo man ist. Sie ist in Massachusetts, aber in da und in New York und in Kalifornien ist es so, dass die Gouverneure sich benehmen wie Kaiser, wie selbstherrliche Kaiser. Das haben wir auch schon von Pam Popper gehört. Und dass die diese Notstandsgesetzgebung, über die alles läuft, vollkommen am Volk vorbei. Das Volk hat ja normalerweise dafür Sorge getragen, dass Gesetze so gemacht werden, wie es das Volk will. Jetzt nicht mehr. Jetzt macht die Verwaltung oder jetzt macht die Regierung das. Die entscheiden, wie lange das Ganze so weitergeht. Und da seien die Leute schon in diesen Staaten einigermaßen verzweifelt, weil sie keine Richtung mehr sehen können. Das geht ja auch über Parteilinien hinweg. In den USA gibt es ja nur zwei Parteien, also jedenfalls nennenswerte Parteien, nämlich einmal die Demokraten und einmal die Republikaner. Und da gibt es eben auch offenbar immer noch eine Mehrheit in beiden Parteien, die für diese Lockdowns und für diese ganzen Maßnahmen sind. Es gibt allerdings auch massive Gegenwehr. Es gibt immer mehr Senatoren, die sich auch in New York wehren. Es gibt in Kalifornien diesen Recall, in dem man den Gouverneur, Gavin Newsom heißt der, in dem man den aus dem Amt schmeißen will. Ich dachte, das geht nur in Kalifornien, aber es gibt, sagte sie gerade, noch 21 Staaten, wo das auch möglich ist und wo auch was passieren wird. Tatsache, dass hier so viele Leute orientierungslos sind, führt dazu, dass man auch, oder das eine hängt vom anderen ab, dass so wenig Kommunikation möglich ist, weil die Mainstream-Medien natürlich genauso wie da durch Bill Gates Geld machen, was Bill Gates erzählt und nicht mehr was mit Journalismus zu tun hat, haben. Und so wissen dann auch in vielen Fällen die einzelnen Anwälte nicht mehr, was der andere Anwalt macht, obwohl es sehr wichtig wäre, sich gerade hier auszutauschen. Ich glaube allerdings, das können wir gleich noch aufklären, das hat sich schon geändert. Sie spricht auch davon, dass es natürlich auch Länder gibt, die aus ihrer Sicht, das hat sie sich wieder eingeholt, dann jenseits von Hilfe sind oder jenseits von Reparaturfähigkeit sind. England lebt seit Monaten im Lockdown, aber wir wissen, auch da gibt es noch Widerstand. Sie sagt aber einen entscheidenden Satz, nämlich, nichts wird sich ändern, wenn diejenigen, die uns in diese Situation gebracht haben, nicht damit rechnen müssen, dass sie juristische Verfolgung aushalten müssen im Nachhinein, dass sie also Gegenstand von zivil- und strafrechtlichen Verfahren sind. Das ist ja auch genau unsere Meinung. That's, I think that is important. Those who are responsible for the situation that we're in right now, including both the marionettes and the people who are pulling their strings. One of them is Bill Gates, as you mentioned. One of the marionettes is, of course, the guy here in Germany who invented this idea about PCR tests being capable of telling you something about infections. That's Drosten. And then there's Fauci, of course. I think you're absolutely right. They all have to know that there will be consequences, both in as far as damages are concerned in the civil courts of law and as far as jail time is concerned in the criminal courts of law. One thing I have to clarify. This morning, I was in a Zoom call with a bunch of Australian lawyers and activists, and it looks as though the international scene is very quickly now cooperating very closely so that we're all on the same page as far as the PCR tests, which are the cornerstone to this whole thing, as far as the PCR tests are concerned. And of course, they all realize that the red line, which will probably help us get more people to listen to our side of the story, is the so-called vaccinations, which are really, we all know they're not vaccines. This is injections and genetic experiments that's being conducted. We spoke to a woman from Israel. You may have heard her audio. Yeah. She's American, actually, but she's been living in Israel for 24 years. And she says that's one of the countries which you
probably could call beyond help, but not really. Because even there, there is a group of people, and they're growing, she says. The number of people who are beginning to ask questions is growing. There is a group of people that is fighting back, and but what they really need is the international connection. They need to be connected with us, because there it seems even worse than here, as the only source of news to probably more than 90% of the people in Israel is the Hebrew news, that what is printed in Hebrew, because that's what most people read, which again means they need this international connection, both for information and for support. But the wild thing that is just beyond belief is that Israelis, and we asked this activist this morning, the absolutely incredible thing is that they're letting these people, the Jewish people, are allowing themselves to be treated in this very same manner as it happened in 80 years ago. But she says that's because the Israeli people have been under attack for so long from so many different sides that they have become not accustomed to, but they trust their government. And when the government tells them that this is how to deal with this pandemic, then they do it. However, even there, more and more people are asking, why is my business, which took generations to set up, why is my business being destroyed? Is there really a meaningful explanation for this? And I think that's important. You have to get people to ask questions.
Yeah. I completely agree with you. I guess I would say, speaking as a Jewish person as someone who's lived in Israel for several years, I don't think that kind of compliance and submissiveness is unique to, you know, my people. It's happening around the world, right. And it's happening to people who have very long histories of fighting back. You know, the Scots are warriors and fiercely independent, and they fought a war of independence against the greatest colonial power at the time, which was England. And they're completely submissive. You know, the Irish are warriors. They've struggled for freedom in powerful ways, and they are locked in their homes, you know, around the world. I mean, Texas only opened up, you know, last week, and that country or that state has a history of independence as well. So I don't think this is a cultural matter. I think that when you have a 360-degree bubble of information, which the internet makes possible, which is, I agree with you, Mr. Fulmich, that is critical.
Call me Reiner, that's much easier.
Thank you, Reiner. That, you know, when you're managing the flow of information, which the, you know, digital space allows, and you can dial up this Zoom meeting, can be algorithmically dialed down or dialed up by people who are making 27% more in profits every quarter, which is big tech, than they did before the pandemic. You know, they have no incentive to amplify this information, right? And when you have every major news outlet like the BBC, just take Britain, $60 million from Bill Gates going to COVID education. The Guardian, tens of millions going to COVID education. The Telegraph, 3.4 million. In the United States, NPR. The New York Times, tens of millions of dollars. The CDC Foundation, I found, was also receiving tens of millions from Gates and Pharma annually. You have a completely corrupted civil society. And so that in that 360-degree bubble, you can really do anything to terrify people. And especially if you start to, which is what I'm really worried about, the vaccine passports. I'm worried about all of it. But, you know, if your child can't go to school if he or she doesn't wear a mask, which is the case for my 9-year-old stepson in Massachusetts, what can I do? I'm a super, you know, I have a gigantic platform and I have no power to make Governor Baker take off my stepson's mask. You know, I call him every other day. I record the conversation. You know, I'm doing everything a citizen can do, and I'm well informed about the law, and I am powerless to take the mask off my stepson's face, even though I know there's no scientific basis for it and that it's a form of child abuse. And we're going to be, you know, intervening with those children for years after, you know, because of the trauma we're inflicting on them. So what you see in Israel, and I think it's the future, I think, you know, I run a data company, right? And I digitize government data. So I really understand what the end game is here. And I really understand why the unholy alliance is between big tech, China, pharma, and Bill Gates, right? As well as Bloomberg investing in all of this, because the pandemic lets oligarchs invest in the stock market doing legal insider trading, right? If you know what the numbers are going to say, or you can, you know that you can dial them up or down with the PCR test, you can make billions of dollars legally in the stock market, whereas insider trading is illegal. But the reason I mention all of this is that the vaccine passports are a pretext. The lockdowns are a pretext for a bunch of things. But one of the things is, once you have the kind of social apartheid around vaccines and around tests that Israel has established, right? And may I note, karmically, with decades of experimenting with how to subdue a population, meaning Palestinians, right? So karma's a bitch, right? But, you know, the technologies, the knowledge of how to track and surveil and subdue a free population are well established in Israel. So now it's being done to Israelis. But if you can't shop without your vaccine passport, if you can't go to school, if you can't go to the beach, people comply just to give their children a sense of normalcy. And my big fear, you know, my own governor, Cuomo, rolled out a proposal. It's happening super fast everywhere. The vaccine passport. This isn't about a vaccine. It's about the data. Because when you have a vaccine passport, you can, and I'm sure you guys have addressed this, you have complete 360-degree geolocation. You have complete surveillance of networks. You know, whoever owns that data will know who my friends are when I have a meeting, you know, when I have a communication like this. It will be the end of dissent. So the vaccine is a pretext. It's the 360-degree tracking that's the goal.
That's really important. I'll translate that. Sie sagt, dass es nicht so ist, dass die Israelis... I never meant to say that the Israelis are a particular submissive people, but what really disturbs me in particular is that they know this is a German vaccine. I mean, how much closer can you get to 1933?
What do you mean it's a German vaccine?
Well, it's a German invention. This is Pfizer, but it's BioNTech Pfizer, and that's a German company. You didn't know that, huh?
I didn't really put the pieces together. That's
we find this extremely disturbing. And
run by two Turkish immigrants, by the way.
Yeah, great. Perfect.
Perfect alliance.
Yeah. But Ilana Rachel Daniels said the same thing this morning. She said that the vaccine passports are probably, of course, they're just a pretext, but, and they're being, we didn't realize, however, that this is going to be used as a 360-degree surveillance tool. How do they use it in that sense? We haven't heard experts on that yet.
Yeah, that's easy to explain. Do you want to translate before I add?
Yeah, I'll complete my translation. Also sie sagt, das Schlimmste daran ist, dass die Mainstream-Medien vollkommen auf der Linie von Bill Gates sind. Und der wiederum ist ja mit der Regierung in einem Bett sozusagen. Und sie hat ein paar Beispiele genannt, so schnell konnte ich die gar nicht aufschreiben, dass der also Tonnen an Geld, 60 Millionen hat er der BBC gegeben für COVID-Education, aber ebenfalls Millionen an NPR. NPR ist das öffentliche Radio und Fernsehen in den USA, das hat eigentlich immer höchstes Ansehen genossen. Genauso die New York Times ist auch offenbar tot, komplett gekauft worden. Dass also dieses ganze Geld da reingeflossen ist, hat dazu geführt, dass zumindest in den Mainstream-Medien, genauso wie hier natürlich, keine vernünftige Information mehr zu kriegen ist, sondern nur noch das, was wir Propaganda nennen. Und sie sagt, diejenigen, die am meisten profitieren von dem, was jetzt gerade passiert, hin zum 360-Grad-Überwachungsapparat Impfpass, das ist Big Tech. Die haben, ich weiß nicht, hat sie gesagt, 27% Zuwachs pro Jahr gehabt jetzt oder noch schlimmer?
Mehr verdient als in den Jahren davor.
Are they making, are they increasing big tech? Are they increasing their profits? You said by 27%. Is that per year or per quarter?
The last numbers I saw were per quarter.
Also jedes Vierteljahr steigern die ihre Gewinne um 27%. Wow.
Yeah. So should I jump in and explain the digital aspect of this hack? So basically, in my essay, which I won't read, but you can see it on the Children's Health Defense website, is and on Chelsea Green's website.
We'll put it up on our website, too.
Thank you so much. It's basically, in addition to everything else you've all identified, what's happening is a hack of humanity, okay? And I don't mean that in a woo-woo tinfoil hat way. It's literally a hack of the human genome and human data, as well as human spaces. So let me step back a minute to important organizations people don't really know about. There's something called the COVID-19 Response Project. Uh-huh. Maybe you do know about it, but it's a group of really surprising corporations, including Amazon, Bloomberg, Microsoft, NASDAQ, Nintendo, and Zoom, as well as other tech companies that got together very early. I mean, at the very start of the pandemic, before we had any idea what, whether this was a one-week crisis, a two-week crisis, a year-long crisis. And their goal was to, you know, explain COVID to the world. Well, these are the companies that are making money off of crush. Amazon makes vast profits crushing Wall Street. I'm sorry, of crushing Main Street, you know, and crushing small businesses, right? Nintendo makes vast profits when your child is home with no friends. You know, Microsoft and Google, you know, Google is where you sign in and where your data go here in the United States when you sign up for a CVS drugstore PCR test. So all of these companies and NASDAQ, I mentioned the kind of legal insider trading, you know, all of these companies have a vested interest in making lockdowns last forever. And NASDAQ has a vested interest in knowing how they'll be dialed up, how they'll be dialed down, where the numbers go, right? With the PCR tests, for instance. So these companies that are completely conflicted, you know, and Microsoft has its relationship with Bill Gates. They are the ones who funneled millions of dollars into universities and news organizations. For instance, they funded the Blavatnik School at Oxford, where that's my alma mater. The Blavatnik School isn't a health or medical school, it's governance. And so out of the Blavatnik School, you're getting all these studies showing that lockdown works or masks work and so on, like very corrupted studies. But this money is going to propagandize COVID. Like every time you turn on, you know, your Google search bar, it'll have a little, you know, notification, COVID-19 in Connecticut, COVID-19, the latest COVID-19. That is very, I will tell you as a CEO of a digital tech company, it is extremely difficult to coordinate the messaging that you're getting digitally about the urgency and bigness and badness of COVID without a coordination across these tech giants, right? And even like kicking people like us off of Twitter, that takes coordination. Well, this entity has coordinated it. So now let me move ahead to the vaccine passports and the PCR tests. The PCR test is also a hack, right? China and Bill Gates and these digital tech companies are getting into the genomics space. And all of them have expressed their desire, and it's happening, to build gigantic human DNA databases. Why is that? Because it's incredibly valuable to know, you know, what my future health problems will be like, so that targeted messaging to me and to my doctor about solutions to my problems will be in the hands of whoever holds that genetic data. All right. So that's why you have this testing, as well as the false positives, which you've covered well, to keep the numbers up, you know, unverifiable data. And then moving ahead to the vaccine passports, when, like, my list of people who use my digital site is the most valuable thing in my business model, right? When investors come to me and say, tell us, you know, how Daily Cloud's going to make money, I show them how much data I've gathered from users. That's the value proposition. And we have very transparent privacy protections, right? But you don't have to know someone's full name to have to monetize their data. Just to see how users use a platform is incredibly valuable to sell to third parties. For instance, if users of my site look up credit card related bills, I can sell that information to credit card companies for advertising purposes. It's more valuable than oil. Many people in the digital space have said digital data is the new oil. Now, fast forward to vaccine passports. Every time I sit down in America, there's a nonsensical request in a restaurant for me to swipe my phone to get the menu. Why is that? It's not because there are germs on a piece of paper or they can't put the menu on a blackboard. It's so that my phone registers where I am, and AT&T and whoever, you know, buys it from AT&T knows that Naomi is at that restaurant. And then if other people are swiping their phones, then my whole network is fed into a system that shows, like, all of you, I hate to tell you this, you're all already in a platform that shows relationships between people. Okay. So if we all gather again to talk about fighting back against tyranny, the machines will know, and they then interpolate your credit score, your property that you own, you know, anything online that you might have said, and now your medical data into one 360 degree ability to surveil you. And wherever your phone goes with your vaccine passport, because it will be digital, they won't give you a piece of paper, which can't be tracked, they'll, you know, you're constantly generating data that can be sold to advertisers, but also, you know, your government or meta governments now can track exactly where you're going, who your networks are, what kind of calls you're making, you know, to whom, what your internet search looks like, you know, while you're at that basketball game or when you go home. And there's, that is the end of privacy. And it's also the end of civil society, because if they want to arrest you, if they change what you're doing now from law to subversion, they now know exactly who's sitting around this table, right? Or if you go out and have a drink with your vaccine passports, they'll know exactly who is with you having a drink. So it's not about the virus. It's about a China-style social credit system. And I think that's everything. Well, I guess there's one more thing I want to say about the digital piece. Every time our children are in a classroom with other human children, every time we are worshiping in a church or synagogue or mosque with other human beings, every time we are going for a walk outside with our friends or having a party or sitting at a bar, tech companies are losing money because their business model, in addition to data, is eyeballs. Right? That's how they sell advertising. So when you're not on your device, they're losing money. So basically, digital tech companies are, we are their competitor. Human space is their competitor. Human contact is their competitor. Children playing in a playground is their competitor. Any joy human beings can have face to face or meaning undermines the profits of big tech companies and is the last frontier of what they can colonize as a financial model. So driving us all home, driving us to shop online, forbidding our children from going to school, creating distance learning platforms, which are also vastly lucrative for tech companies, you know, making sure we can't gather to worship, making sure we can't go to a bar and that people can't fall in love, let alone have a protest. That's the last frontier. They're hacking what I call analog space, human space, because we are their last competitor. So they're breaking apart the human bonds, the human civilization and social contract, especially for the next generation, so that they won't have any more competitors and they get to mediate and profit from everything we do.
Okay. Well, just a quick response. They can't win. They cannot win. Also, Sie hat uns erklärt, dass dieser PCR-Test genauso wie der digitalisierte Vaccine-Passport letztlich nichts anderes ist als ein Hacking des unserer Menschlichkeit, unserer DNA und sämtlicher Kommunikation, die wir haben. Die menschliche DNA wird als Datenbasis benutzt. Und zwar wird der PCR-Test, der wird jetzt immer weitergeführt, weil man ja jedes Mal weitere Informationen bekommt. Deswegen geht es eben die ganze Zeit weiter, soll aber am Ende zu etwas führen, was China und Bill Gates, die da offenbar zusammenarbeiten, sind ja auch die beiden Herrscher sozusagen der WHO, sich zusammen ausgedacht haben. Nämlich dazu, dass am Ende eine 360 Grad oder wir würden vielleicht sagen, eine vollkommene Transparenz, Durchsichtigkeit des Menschen erzeugt wird, sodass diejenigen in Big Tech, die an diesen Daten interessiert sind, die heute so wichtig sind oder so wertvoll sind, wie es damals das Erdöl gewesen ist, sodass diese Leute immer wissen, was wir wann, wo, mit wem machen. Also es geht nicht um die Gesundheit, es geht nicht um die Gesundheitsdaten. Das ist nur der Vorwand, der Pretext, um an diese ganzen Daten zu kommen. Das wird dann das Ende der Privatsphäre sein und das Ende der zivilen Gesellschaft sein. Wir bewegen uns mit dieser ständigen Aufnahme aller Daten in einen China-Style-mäßigen, in ein soziales Bonussystem. Also wenn wir uns wohlverhalten, dann kriegen wir über diese digitale Kontrolle vielleicht Geld. Und wenn wir uns nicht so richtig wohlverhalten, dann kriegen wir eben keins mehr. Und sie sagt, dass der Grund dafür, dass hier diese Lockdowns weitergehen, dass sie nicht beendet werden, liegt darin, dass diese Unternehmen, von denen wir eben gesprochen haben, extrem viel Geld mit diesen Daten verdienen. Es gibt da eine Covid-19-Response-Gruppe von Unternehmen, das sind alles Big-Tech-Unternehmen, Microsoft, Nintendo, Zoom, Amazon, Google.
Nasdaq.
Nasdaq steht daneben und beobachtet das alles. Ist ja kein wirkliches Tech, oder? Kann man auch dazu zählen, ja.
Gehört dazu, ja.
Das sind jedenfalls die Leute, die hier unsere Daten einsammeln. Nintendo sorgt dafür, dass die Kinder keine Freunde mehr haben, sondern mit ihren Computerspielen zu Hause sitzen. Amazon ist bekannt, die zerstören gerade die Main Street, sagt sie. Also das ist der Mittelstand. Und dass Microsoft sich mit digitalen Welten auskennt, ist bekannt. Also die profitieren davon, und die profitieren nur dann davon, solange wir auf ihren Devices, mit ihren Geräten rumspielen. Das müsste die eigentlich mit großer Freude erfüllen, wenn die meisten von uns bei jeder Gelegenheit ständig nicht miteinander reden, sondern in ihre Handys gucken. Sie sagt, das ist genau der Punkt. Die treiben das weiter, weil nur dann verdienen sie Geld, wenn wir uns in diesem von denen selbst aufgebauten digitalen Netzen bewegen. Am Computer sitzen, mit dem Smartphone rumspielen, zu Hause sitzen, anstatt draußen zu sein, weil wir uns durch die Lockdowns einsperren lassen, dann nicht mal mehr kommunizieren, sondern nur noch über Zoom kommunizieren, also eine Hilfskommunikation bemühen. All das hilft, digitale Daten einzusammeln. Diese Zoom-Kommunikation, der Blick ins Handy. Sie sagt, wenn sie ins Restaurant geht, dann muss sie immer das Handy swipen, weil auch das benutzt wird, damit die Datensammler in Anführungsstrichen sehen, wo sie ist. Diese Daten werden dann wieder ausgewertet. Das nimmt dann Ausmaße an, wonach auch jederzeit festgestellt werden kann, wann wir wo gewesen sind. Dass wir hier jetzt über Zoom kommunizieren, wird dann eben jetzt wahrscheinlich von irgendjemandem aufgezeichnet und wird dann bei nächster Gelegenheit benutzt werden können, um zum Beispiel, die Rebellen oder die Gegner oder die Kriminellen sind wir dann wahrscheinlich, genau orten zu können, um genau sagen zu können, hey, Kontaktschuld, du hast mit Naomi Wolf, du hast mit Dirk Pullman rumgesessen, das bedeutet, das sind Kriminelle, also bist du auch einer. Auf diese Weise läuft das, sagt sie, und wird, wenn wir da nicht noch einschreiten, dazu führen, dass wir über diesen Vaccine Passport, der also nur ein Vorwand ist, wird dazu führen, dass das Ende der Privatsphäre erreicht ist und eben das Ende der zivilen Gesellschaft, so wie wir es kennen.
You mentioned something about basically they made insider trading legal. I don't know if that has come to the attention of the American people, but here in Germany, actually some members of the German parliament, of the ruling party actually, are now under investigation for active bribery because what did happen, allegedly, so it would seem, they went to companies and struck deals with them or made deals with the government, with the government possible, or facilitated them and got money for it, for getting masks. So they always propagated, no, we don't need masks, we don't need masks. And allegedly in the background, they went and did some networking and then they got payments for striking deals. And oh, now we need the masks. That's, I said it about a week ago, that's basically if they did that at the stock market, they would be imprisoned. Right away.
Totally right. You are 1,000% right. And I just want to note that that story is also, I'm sure you know, unfolding in Britain with crony capitalism, in which Boris Johnson's friends, the Good Law Project, I'm sure you know, has exposed vast billions, you know, for PPE. Mm-hmm. And in America, it's insane. The bill that was just passed, the American Rescue Act, has $176 billion for COVID response, including primarily vaccines, but also PPE. And buddies have those contracts. And if we don't need PPE, if the pandemic is over, those incredible amounts of corruption would indeed put these people in prison. But under emergency orders, of course, you can charge whatever you want for masks. And, you know, who will say you don't need masks if their buddy is making millions and millions and millions of dollars from it? This corruption is worldwide. And, you know, look at who's providing the data. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but in America and globally, the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health provides the most cited platform, digital platform. They don't let anyone see the raw data sets. I tried. It's against their laws in terms of use. COVID-19 tracking was also owned by The Atlantic, and it was bought by Bloomberg. They allow unnamed volunteers to upload data, and some of their data comes from a hedge fund site called Enigma Business Solutions. And again, the data are completely unverifiable. In Britain, the Office of National Statistics digital dashboard is run with partners who are unnamed, but it sounds they're for-profit partners, including entities like Boots, and foreign companies that are not even British, right? So it's not being run by governments. There's a giant contract to produce and manage these data. Well, Bloomberg also, so Bloomberg owns two of the most cited, totally unverifiable COVID dashboards. He also posts what the COVID dashboards say on the front page of his investor site, right? And so you can literally, if you know 5 minutes, if you're, you know, Michael Bloomberg, and you know 5 minutes before the rest of the world whether this is going to go up or going to go down, you know, you can make billions of dollars legally simply longing or shorting the stock market. So it is a vast, in addition to, I mean, it's kind of a genius methodology these bad actors have created, where you get to enslave the population, mint, you know, all their data, traumatize the next generation so that they're a submissive workforce who don't expect liberty, and, you know, make it legal to engage in vast corruption and make it legal to engage in insider trading and kill Main Street, kill your competitors, kill small businesses. And also, we haven't talked about property, but the driving of small businesses out of business is also driving small landlords to sell their assets in a fire sale, which allows big developers to scoop it up. So you're seeing that K-shaped recovery, it's called, where basically it's a massive wealth transfer to a few bad actors, and everyone else will be in a feudal state.
Ja, sie hat es nochmal ausführlicher dargestellt, wie hier die Bad Actors, wie sie sie nennt, also die Bösen auf der anderen Seite aus der Tech-Industrie versuchen, die Gesellschaft zu ihrem Vorteil noch weiter zu verändern. Das ist ja schon eine ganze Weile gelaufen, das hätte man eigentlich schon viel früher merken müssen, aber immerhin. Besser spät als nie. Da spricht sie davon, dass von diesem gigantischen von diesem ganzen Rettungspaket, ich glaube 1,9 Trilliarden oder irgendwie sowas, wird da in den USA gerade verbraten. Billionen natürlich. Aber allein davon gehen 176 Milliarden an dieses als Covid Rescue Passage Package raus. Und davon kriegen dann Leute wie die Johns Hopkins Bloomberg Gruppe, die offiziell sozusagen die Daten über die Covid-Pandemie verbreiten und keinen Zugang zu den Rohdaten zulässt, sodass niemand überprüfen kann, ob die Daten echt sind. Davon kriegen die einen ganzen Brocken. Ähnlich läuft das offenbar in England, hat sie dargestellt. Auch da sind es private Unternehmen, nicht die Regierung, die die Daten und die Informationslage bestimmen, sodass sie sagt, am Ende ist es so, dass, wenn man sich das genauer anguckt, zu dem Schluss kommen muss, hier wird die gesamte Bevölkerung sozusagen versklavt. Gleichzeitig werden sämtliche ihrer Daten abgegriffen. Und das Dritte ist, dass die Kinder durch die Masken, durch das Social Distancing und so weiter so traumatisiert werden, dass von denen jedenfalls keine Gegenwehr mehr zu erwarten sein wird. That's a very bleak prospect. But apparently, even in the United States, and I think didn't you just say that this is probably going to be decided, this is going to be the major battleground, the United States, we believe it's the United States and Germany, because all of the other countries kind of are looking, here in Europe at least, are looking towards Germany, what's going on there? Like we spoke to a number of people from Spain, a doctor, a lawyer, and a police officer, and they said, yes, there is a group of people that are trying to fight back, but we're a pretty small group of people. And what we basically do is we look towards Germany, and if we can tell, if we see that Germany is allowing their major industries to be destroyed, then our question is, what good is it to fight here in Spain? Does it help us any? Well, everything helps. And but I do think it's going to be both in the United States and in Germany, the two major battlegrounds where this whole fight will be decided. And we're not at the, we haven't reached the end yet. As far as the, but, and you know, in the United States, we spoke with Pam Popper. You may have heard of her. She's a pretty active activist from Ohio, Columbus, Ohio. She works with a lawyer by the name of Tom Renz. Then there's CHD, the Kennedy Group of Lawyers, Mary Holland. You know those people. And they're pretty active. I do think if you take this into consideration, if you take into consideration that we're all now connected, at least the lawyers are connected on an international level, and we're working in a coordinated effort to stop this. I do think there's reason for hope, but of course this alone, legal activities alone, will not do the trick. We're gonna need
activists like you and everyone else here who are going to keep fighting in order to get the truth out, to get as many people as possible to turn their attention away from COVID and towards this data mining, et cetera. And in addition, we need to do something about politics. And maybe, I don't know how to do that in the United States, because you have these two parties and they're almost in lockstep. Not quite, because there's still a number of governors, a number of Republican governors out there, for example, in Texas, who are not going to play along. But basically, it's a situation in... But, you know, here in Germany, we believe there are about 30%, 20, 30% of the people who don't quite agree with the measures. I'm saying don't quite because some of them are still in line, but are beginning to have doubts. But in the United States, I think the majority of, not the majority, but maybe 40, between 40 and 50% of the people are anti these measures. So there's lots of hope. There's lots of room for hope there.
I mean, should I make a kind of last comment?
Is
this time for a kind of wrap up? I want to agree with you. And of course, you know, it's wonderful that the lawyers are in touch around the world, and you guys are heroes, and you know, you shouldn't for a minute minimize the importance of the modeling that you're doing and the networking that you're doing. And you know, they're, our resistance is growing. I guess the reason I want to really sound a very urgent alarm is that in every closing democracy, there were lawyers, there were judges, there was a political process. I mean, you know, the people have, and you as Germans know this better than anyone, but it's important for the whole world to wake up and realize it quickly. You can have something that looks like democracy, but is no longer democracy, right? You can have, you know, elections that are corrupted. You can have judges that are corrupted. You can have lawyers that are intimidated or silenced or bought or criminalized. You can have journalists who have jobs, but have a narrow, you know, parameter in which to report. And all of these things happened. You know, Germany fell to the National Socialists, as you all know better than I do, through an absolutely democratic process. People really need to get that quickly. Yeah. I guess what is hopeful, so I agree with you, we need to work together. The time is very short. The crisis is very serious because there are new technologies now that didn't exist the last time the world went dark, right? But it does take, in addition to everything you're doing, it takes a real effort to educate ordinary citizens in democracies about what their rights are, what their recourse is, and how democracy works, you know, very, very quickly. And we're, you know, Daily Cloud is really at the forefront of trying to do that quickly so people know what is a referendum, you know, how can I run for office? And I think this has to happen in Europe as well. I mean, the EU has been very bad, I think, for grassroots democracy in Europe in the sense that people were encouraged to just leave it to the bureaucrats. Exactly. And I think most people don't even understand how democracy works in Europe right now, in European countries.
Absolutely.
Quite apart from the pandemic. So, you know, that kind of, I'm getting emails from people in Britain and they're in desperate straits because they had Brexit without a written constitution. And I warned them right before I experienced a global character assassination on my last book that without a written constitution, they would be at risk of a coup if they left the European Union. And literally that's what they're seeing. They have no law to protect them except the European Court of Human Rights, I believe, or European Commission of Human Rights. So we have to educate people at the grassroots level, like, what are your rights, right? How do you lobby? What recourse do you have? And then we have to encourage people to ignore, you know, the restrictions and engage in peaceful civil disobedience, dissent. You know, every collapsing democracy was reawakened with protest and mass assembly, which is now forbidden in most countries. So we have to ignore those restrictions on mass assembly and show that, you know, show how huge the people are. And I guess the last thing I want to say, speaking especially, I'm very moved to be speaking to Germans about this in, you know, and that this fight is led by Germans for Europe. The biggest problem I have trying to wake people up in America is that people can't believe how satanic history can be, right? We've had a very, I mean, except if you're an indigenous person or an enslaved person, you know, otherwise people in America do not know how quickly history can turn genocidal and satanic. And, you know, I was talking to a colleague here at AIER early on, and I said, you have no idea how satanic this is. You know, once I found, and I mean that metaphorically, of course, but how evil, right? How dark. When I had tracked what the intentions were and who the bad actors were and where it was going. And he said, but I can't believe that, because that would be so unthinkable. And I said, well, it's time to think the unthinkable. You know, the biggest challenge facing us right now is scope of imagination. Genocidal sociopaths have united to suppress human beings. And we've got to get that in time and not be sentimental or deluded. We can fight genocidal sociopaths, but that is literally what's happened. It's happened before, and we need to wake up quickly and join forces. I agree with you. Then there's hope.
Yeah, there still is hope. There's always hope, you know?
There's always hope.
Also, ich habe gesagt, also, es muss aber irgendwo auch noch mal einen Lichtblick geben. Sie sagt, ja klar, es gibt noch immer Grund zur Hoffnung. Ich habe sie dann daran erinnert, dass es ja auch gerade in den USA eine ganze Gruppe von Menschen gibt. Pam Popper ist eine davon, die hatten wir hier mit dem Anwalt Tom Renz. Wir haben außerdem mit Bobby Kennedy gesprochen, Mary Holland. Sind schon Bewegungen unterwegs, oder die Anwältin, deren Video wir beim nächsten Mal oder zum nächsten Mal rechtzeitig zeigen werden in New Mexico, die sehr viel machen. Also sie sagt, das hatten wir aber immer schon. In jeder zusammenbrechenden Demokratie, sagt sie, gab es ein paar Anwälte, da gab es auch ein paar Richter und ein paar andere aufrechte Leute, die ihr Bestes versucht haben. Aber sehr viele davon waren dann am Ende korrupt und haben sich kaufen lassen, sodass das, was als Demokratie angefangen hatte, nur noch aussah wie eine Demokratie und in Wahrheit völlig ausgehöhlt war. Sie sagt, die Zeit, die wir noch haben, ist sehr knapp. Im Unterschied zu der früheren dunklen Periode, das war das Dritte Reich, gibt es jetzt eine Reihe von neuen Technologien, die gab es damals nicht. Damit hat man noch leichteres Spiel, uns unter Kontrolle zu bringen. Was entscheidend sein dürfte aus ihrer Sicht, das ist auch unsere Sicht, ist, wir müssen die Fakten rausbringen. Wir müssen den Menschen beibringen, erklären, was passiert. Und das so, dass wir nicht gleich in Streit geraten, sondern dass hoffentlich immer mehr Leute dem zuhören und beginnen, Fragen zu stellen.
Und wie Demokratie funktioniert.
Und wie Demokratie funktioniert, das ist entscheidend. You know, that's probably the crucial factor to make people understand how democracy works. And you're right when you're saying that people here in Europe don't understand how democracy works as far as the EU is concerned, because that's a totally undemocratic, globalized kind of thing. A lot of people here in Europe agree, be it us, the Germans, or the Italians, or the Dutch, they all agree that this looks as though they're trying to take away our cultural identities. And right from the start, that was a major concern of many people here, which, and I agreed with that right from the start, but only not from a rational standpoint, but rather because it's an emotional kind of thing. Now we know it's true, because that's precisely what they're trying to do, try to take away our cultural identities, take away our humanity. But we had a professor of psychology on this program a couple of hours ago, and he said precisely what you're saying. We have to teach people how to live in a democracy. And he says what it takes is moral competency. Moral competency means you have to be able to not just accept orders and follow orders, but to ask questions, one. And two, you also have to be able to enter into negotiations, discussions, rather than take out the gun and shoot the other guy. So in that sense, he completely agrees with you. That means you must be right.
Sure. I think we're all right. We're all right in asking these questions and joining forces.
Okay.
May I ask you a question? I recently read some articles that Bill Gates is now the biggest landowner, and that sounds a lot like serfdom another way. So there's from a German theater play, there's here is strict order because here is strict hunger. Yeah, it sounds a little bit like that. Could you please, because I don't know too much about it, are you familiar with it? So, and put it in perspective and tell what's going on and why?
Sure. I have also seen confirmed reports of that. And I know he's also buying up seeds and the seed supply. And big corporations have also been buying up water supplies. Yeah. So I think that, you know, we haven't talked about China, but I think that there, in addition to the bad actors we've identified, Bill Gates is in alignment with, in big tech is in alignment with, you know, an entity that wants to be the next global superpower by 2025, in the, according to their stated, you know, mission statements as a global power, and that's China, the Chinese Communist Party specifically. And the things that you're seeing, the erasure of culture, the weakening of bonds between children and their parents, the dilution of, you know, the destruction of landmarks. I mean, I'm very progressive, but there's a systematic erasing of history, erasing of landmarks, diluting of culture, diluting of you know, everything that we could gather around in the West. And it, my husband is an investigator and has identified, you know, very powerfully money flowing from the Chinese Communist Party, as well as Bill Gates, to buy up basically influencers, leaders, community leaders, even down to the kind of local level in the United States. So basically what's happening is not just a war on humanity, but a war on the West. And I am an anti-racist. I am, you know, I am the daughter of immigrants, but when we are perforated, right, and are a foreign power that is a totalitarian tyranny has bought up our leaders and is erasing our history. And, you know, do you notice they keep talking about holidays with lockdowns? Like, oh, you won't have Christmas, you won't have Thanksgiving, you won't have Easter, you know, you won't have, you know, I mean, It's so systematic as a psychological operation to leave us completely demoralized as nation states that could possibly remember who we are as Germans or as Americans or as British people or French people and fight back this totalitarian power. So it's a genius way, now talking about geopolitics and not big tech, it's a great way to invade a country without firing a single bullet, or in our case, invade the West. So where the, it's not really a direct answer to your question, except to say that what we are seeing is the flowing of billions of dollars through Bill Gates via China, you know, via big tech as well, to make there be no alternative to Bill Gates, right? The food supply, telecommunications, pharmaceuticals, our DNA database. I'm very creeped out that he's invested in managing reproduction. You know, he's invested in the vaginal microbiome, which creeps me out significantly. I'm very worried that this vaccine has not been tested on pregnant and lactating women, right? So when you've got these kinds of bad actors who have multiple agendas to be the only way for us to survive, right? The choke point. It's very serious. And so, yes, the buying up of land, the buying up of water, the buying up of seeds, the intervention in our bodies is I think all part of that, which is again why I keep talking about like grassroots devolving, you know, small businesses, small landholders, small you know, people gathering to educate their children together, people gathering to worship, people gathering to create their own societies. But I'm going to say one last thing, because I'm speaking to a European audience. You know, borders are very politically incorrect. And critiquing immigration is very politically incorrect, but it's a dire moment. So I'm just going to say that, and I am, again, daughter of immigrants, pro-reasonable integration, but borders, when you lose your borders as a nation state, you really lose any ability to engage in democracy. And when Europe just dissolved its borders, you know, it meant that people in Greece can't make decisions for the people of Greece, and people of France can't make decisions for the people of France. And when you add to that a kind of dilution of everything that is a cultural heritage, right? I think personally that is dressed up in very kind of progressive language, but it really is a systematic way to disempower Europe and the West. And I'm not saying any group is better than any other group. It would be the same if you were flooding Morocco with foreigners or flooding Ghana with foreigners. I really want to make this impossible to decontextualize, or erasing the cultural history of Ghana or erasing the cultural history of Morocco. I believe in multi-ethnic, egalitarian, inclusive societies. I want to see that really clearly. Mm-hmm. But, you know, America is one. America is a great model. But without a border, you know, and a nation state, all of us are powerless to fight back when there are decisions happening above the heads of nation states as they are now. And that's where Bill Gates and pharma and China's interest in Bill Gates and pharma and our subjugation comes in. So I think we need a progressive, inclusive, pro-immigration, anti-racist effort to reestablish nation states and democracies as a result.
I have a question, you know, with regard to what you just said. Like, you know, this collection of the genes, the genome, like, what else can that be used for, except from just selling us like medical treatment or something? Because I think if this all, you know, continues as it's laid out right now, there's not going to be so many people who are going to be able to afford some expensive kind of treatment. So what else would they use all that stuff for?
Oh, God, that's a great question. And I'm not best qualified to answer it in detail. I'm concerned that policies can quickly become eugenicist. If you know that someone has a defect or an illness, inevitable, or their DNA, there's a horrible history of eugenics in our human civilization, and my people have been on the receiving end of it. So, of course, like, I am concerned that we're in a, you know, with these vaccinated, unvaccinated rules, you know, yellow star. I mean, I'm worried that we're moving into a space in which governments can say, okay, well, you've got really good DNA and your DNA is not so good, so you can reproduce and you can't reproduce, or, you know, you're up for sterilization because your DNA is terrible. I mean, if the state can intrude a vaccine into your personal body, you know, without your consent, with all this coercion, or if you're a child, right, you can't consent, then a DNA database really allows governments or corporations to say, well, this is the kind of population we want to have. But I'm not a genomist. So in addition to the commercial uses of it, that is theoretical from my non-scientific background.
Übersetzen noch,
gell? Yeah. Also, wir haben es hier offenbar, so fasst sie das zusammen, mit genozidalen Soziopathen zu tun auf der anderen Seite. So sehen die ja auch eigentlich alle aus, finde ich. Und es geht darum, offenbar, dass so Superreiche wie Bill Gates, da gibt's natürlich noch mehr, und China sich zusammengetan haben, um Europa und letzten Endes den Westen insgesamt
sowohl der kulturellen als auch der persönlichen Identität seiner Bewohner zu berauben, sodass man dann letzten Endes ausschließlich noch digital geführte Menschen und digital überwachte Menschen hat. Auf deine Frage, Dirk, was da mit dem ganzen Land ist, da gab es gerade einen ausführlichen Artikel im Defender von Robert Kennedy Jr., der sagt, dass er wahrscheinlich der größte Landowner ist. Ist er schon. Und es ist jedenfalls so, dass ich sowohl China als auch Bill Gates alles Mögliche aufkaufen, was nicht nied- und nagelfest ist, einschließlich sich in die Medien, das ist ja das wichtigste Transportmittel dieser Botschaft, einschließlich sich in die Medien reinzukaufen. Sie sagt, es sei ihr gar nicht klar gewesen, mit was für einem satanistischen, im Sinne von bösen, Gegner wir es hier zu tun haben. Deswegen diese genozidalen Soziopathen, darüber muss man sich klar werden. Das sehen wir ja auch so. Es geht nur, oder man wird die Menschen erst dann in Bewegung bringen können, wenn sie sich darüber klar werden, um was es hier wirklich geht. Dass es eben nicht um Gesundheit und Covid geht, sondern um was ganz anderes. Und sie sagt, sie sei eigentlich, ist sie der Auffassung, dass Grenzen was Schlechtes sind. Andererseits sagt sie aber in diesem Zusammenhang hier, in dem wir hier sprechen, sind Grenzen eines Landes wichtig, weil man nur, wenn man innerhalb dieser Grenzen seine eigene Kultur noch hat und kennt, in der Lage ist, sich um diese Menschen, die da sind, vernünftig zu kümmern. Das kann nicht von oben kommen, über die EU oder über eine Weltregierung der UN, sondern dafür, das ist ja auch das, was Wolfgang Wodak immer sagt, dafür müssen wir in der Lage sein, innerhalb der Grenzen unserer Familie, innerhalb der Grenzen unserer Region, innerhalb der Grenzen unseres Landes, die angemessenen Regeln zu finden.
Ein Sozialstaat ohne Begrenzung ist nicht möglich.
Ja.
Ganz einfach.
Ja.
Kann ich noch was sagen?
Ja.
I'd just like to add a comment to what you just said. I think the opinion you gave about frontiers and nation states is very insightful and very important. And I just want to stress that the digital world in itself is, as it's used and established right now, of course, without borders. So I think that the digital, the economy, the military, the social life, you know, all parts of society are more and more in the digital world. And we have a situation of Wild West in there. You know, there's no constitution for the digital world. There's no clear transparency how it works. So I think the topic which has to be discussed most is how we put democracy in the digital world. And instead of just trying to go back to nation states, which are obviously destroyed, which has been destroyed in big parts already way before the corona crisis, we should see how the world, which is kind of spaceless, because the digital world doesn't have spaces as the world before, how this can be regulated. I feel it's like we all moved to an empty country, and then there's just the law of the stronger person, and this law is very, very much against the liberties as we understand them, and the sense of equality, and the question I have is, shouldn't we really not just only say, let's go back to a system where we are in real life and locally, but we confront the brutal fact that so much is already digital, even our meeting we have right now, that we also see part of our world is already global, part of our lives is already global, and we cannot just turn back easily what has evolved.
Let me interject, though. I don't agree with that. I think we will have to come back and reconstruct our individual nation states. Plus, we have to find ideas, we have to look at ideas how to democratize the digital arena. But we do, our identities are not in the digital arena. Our identities are in our nation states, in our individual cultures, our families, our regions. Musste mal klargestellt werden.
did you want me to speak to that?
Yes, or? It was a kind of question.
Thank you so much. So I really, those are important. These are all really important, critical questions for this time. I really want to stress, if anyone is watching who wants to take this out of context, that when I say nation state, I'm not talking about a racist, elitist entity. I'm talking about a nation state in its ideal form, which is welcoming to immigrants and then has a citizenship process as opposed to open borders, and which is racially inclusive and egalitarian. I really want to stress that, okay, because I do not want to be taken out of context. And unfortunately, the spokespeople in Europe for nation states tend to be racist and to be kind of culturally fascistic. I believe using the United States as a model, and it is the best model of a pro-immigrant, naturalized citizen, egalitarian nation state that has been cooked up yet, that you can have a France or you can have a Germany that has clear borders and a really good immigration policy and clear paths to citizenship, meaning full Germanness, full Frenchness, that is not based on ethnicity. Okay, I just want to say that. And that is an egalitarian, inclusive nation state. So, and I do have to say, I think it's racist that Europe often will kind of welcome immigrants and open borders, but not have a path to citizenship, because that's not equality. So let me step back one more time and say, as a former political consultant, you can often get people to do things that are ultimately very disempowering to them if you spend a while luring them into a new situation with benefits. So the EU, you know, and I'm not automatically opposed to the EU if it was actually a meta-democracy, but it isn't. The EU offered all this great funding for culture and really egalitarian laws and, you know, same-sex marriage and environmental protections, fabulous stuff. Who wouldn't want to be part of it, right? But it's a devil's bargain, because literally, in exchange, every nation state really gives up its sovereignty. And you cannot have a democracy without borders, you know, because you need to know who is in this democracy. Who are the citizens? Who are being represented? Every single person has to have a voice in a democracy. And when you've got a meta, it's not even a government. I've been pestering the EU for a long time to show me their operating system, basically as a democracy, and it doesn't exist, right? Citizens cannot. And at this, you know, my eyes were opened to this by an interview with a Portuguese member of the European Parliament. And he said, basically, there is an unelected group of diplomats who have veto power. I can initiate, but they decide. That's not a democracy. And it overruled the people of Madeira, which, you know, he represented, and what they wanted. So, you know, over and over again, I've asked the EU to show me how people can lobby. How can they see legislation before it becomes law? And the legislation is completely opaque. Special interests abound, but you don't see disclosure. So, and since the closest...
One moment. We've just been cut off.
Yeah, but this is probably just
probably a technical. Yeah, could be just a technical problem.
Technical thing. Well, anyway, I'm going on at length, but just to wrap up, can I wrap up or am I not being heard?
We're not online anymore, so we'll have to wait a couple of minutes.
Yeah, I can.
Ich muss jetzt aber los.
Okay. Are you familiar with Jan Karski or Jan Karski, the story? Jan Karski.
I don't know who that
okay.
is.
Okay. Now, then it's because you said from so many people in the United States it was difficult to understand what happened in Germany. Jan Karski was an officer of the Polish Army, and he was inserted and taken out again into a pre-camp of Sobibor and into the ghetto in Warsaw to see firsthand what is going on there. Then he was sent to the President of the United States, Roosevelt, and the judge of the Supreme Court Frankfurter to report what he had seen firsthand, what happened to the Jews in Poland, 43, I think. And he was telling them, and he met disbelief, because at that time in the American newspapers, the Holocaust was on page 42, or not reported at all. And even if it was told from a first-hand source, they didn't believe what he was telling them.
Thought it was a political weiter?
Trial to get more action into the Polish arena from the Americans.
Filmen so wir gerade?
Something of this magnitude, which now defines history in a way, has been treated as a conspiracy story at that time, met with disbelief because it was so huge. They couldn't believe that a whole population was supposed to be killed off. It sounded too much like World War I propaganda to them. So that's a good explanation. Now many people think World War II was fought by the Americans because of the Holocaust, but it was in denial of that, and Great Britain was too. So that's, if somebody tells you it's so hard to believe, that's from history. That's a lesson from history. And you can see his testimony on the documentary of Claude Lanzmann, Shoah. And he also, it was not the full interview. The full interview is also on YouTube. And it broke John Karski. He couldn't live with that knowledge, that he tried to convince them and failed. And so look at that.
That is Naomi, really I have to say goodbye because I have to catch a train because I have to be back in my office at 8 p.m. German time for another Zoom with the with Mary and Bobby Kennedy and all the others.
Oh, fantastic. Well, it's been wonderful to talk to you all. Thank you so much. Have a safe journey. And, you know, I feel I should end this sentence so no one is too depressed. Whatever we do to create nation states, communities, even on a local level where people have autonomy and know how to lobby.
Jetzt sind wir
We're online again.
That is the goal.
Here's
it's an honor to be fighting alongside of you. You're all pioneers.
Could you repeat that again when we're online?
So machen wir noch zusammen den Rest, Rainer, oder?
Yeah, we're going to have this,
should I sign off?
Yeah, let's try that again. That last sentence is perfect.
That was good, right?
Yeah.
So just to say what
I think sind wir?
Los,
they have to count down. Oh, 1 second.
Yeah.
Okay.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay, we're back online.
So to wrap up, there's nothing stronger in terms of human empowerment than a post-1848 secular democracy that is a nation state with elected representatives. So that's the ideal. But if we can't get to that, and many of us can't get to it easily, whatever we can do at a local level, at a state level, at a canton level, to create assembly with where everyone understands how to lobby, how to legislate, what their rights are, that kind of autonomy, grassroots activism, that is the goal, to fight this very great, great evil. And it's an honor to be fighting alongside of you. You are all pioneers and heroes. Thank you.
We can only do it together. We're all on the same side. We're fighting for the good stuff.
That's true. And I hope millions continue to join us. Thank you so much for your leadership.
It's a pleasure and an honor, Naomi. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Likewise. Thank you all so much. Thank you.